Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for today's program. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. We will be discussing the Kaylee Anthony and Hayley Cummings cases, and I'm also hoping that we can broaden the discussion a little bit to missing and abused children on the whole. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Jan, good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Simon. I hope everybody will kind of have a little patience with me today. I'm not exactly up to par completely. I had another fall last week that kind of put me down again, so working my way back up.
And from Sin City, Nevada, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, it's always good to talk to you.
Well, good afternoon, Simon and Jan. Great to be with you. And Jan, I'm sorry to hear about your fall. I hope you have a speedy recovery.
Thank you, Denny. I'm getting there.
Actually, the whole thing happened in almost slow motion. I've never seen anything quite like it.
That's what my mother said. I don't know. I don't remember it.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. I mean, it obviously happened in just a couple of seconds, but it was like slow motion. You know, and everyone's going, "Oh no." We are hoping to have Armando Aldazabal join us from St. Augustine, Florida. He's a bit late, but, I'm not sure he's ever been on time for anything. So we'll just wait and see if he actually makes it. As always, our phone lines are open, and we welcome your questions and comments. The dial-in number is area code 646-378-1120. And, of course, our chat room is open, and you're welcome to leave your questions and comments there. I'd like to start this week with the Kaylee Anthony case. There were a few things that happened this week that I think warrant discussion. There was a hearing on Thursday to determine Casey's indigent status. I actually watched it gavel to gavel, and quite honestly, I was appalled by what I saw. Jan, you watch most of it. Well, what did you think?
I got a good laugh out of it, that's for sure. I thought it was entertaining. I mean, it's a shame that you have to say that you got a laugh at such a serious case, but, I mean, they're making a big joke out of all of this, if you ask. I mean, that's my opinion of it. That's exactly what the defense team is making this of.
Denny, did you have an opportunity to view this sitcom?
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't, and probably just as well, because I don't know if I'd have had the same reaction you did with a laugh. I may have thrown something through the TV set.
Okay.
You probably would have.
Well, Jose Baez took this as the opportunity to introduce yet his latest pro bozo lawyer, Cheney Mason. And I can honestly say that Cheney Mason makes Baez look positively likable. I mean, he was rude to everyone.
Yes, he was. Even to Judge Strickland, he was rude. He was ridiculous. I don't know how Judge Strickland allowed him to talk like that in the courtroom to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching it, and I'm going, oh, I can feel sanctions coming on.
I kept waiting for Judge Strickland to say something, but he never did. He just kept taking it. And talking about wanting to throw something at the TV, I just wanted, even though this guy made Baez look almost likable. I still have a distinct, complete dislike for Baez, and I wanted to just slap that smirk off his face like I always want to do.
Did you notice that Casey seemed to have a little bit of a smirk as
well? Oh, yeah. It's like they really got her convinced. They're going to get her off of this.
Actually, one of the parts that I really enjoyed was the defense got themselves into a huge amount of trouble and needed just a few minutes to regroup. And the last person back in the courtroom was Casey, and there was dead silence, and all you could hear was the clinking of her chains.
Yeah, like the chain gang.
Yeah.
All by herself.
One of the aspects that was discussed at length was money. Well, it would be. You know, if you're declaring your client indigent, you have to prove they don't have any money. And what came to light, even though little of it really was new news, was that ABC had paid $200,000. As I said, this isn't news, that this had floated around for months, and no one wanted to run with it. You know, I guess, you know, fellow journalists from large organizations were going, oh, no, we don't want to touch that story. But now that Baez actually stood up in court and admitted it, everyone's crying foul. I mean, Fox ran this great headline, ABC Checkbook Journalism.
Yeah, well, you could tell he didn't want to have to admit that.
Denny, you've been around the crime business for many years. I mean, what do you think about checkbook journalism? Should the networks pay for interviews?
Well, it depends. If they want to interview me, I think it's a hell of an idea. If for somebody else, I might have to. No, actually, I always found that when you had a, not from a media perspective necessarily, but if you were an investigator and you had to make deals or pay or whatever for an interview or for information, that information could very easily be discredited.
Right.
And in fact, it generally was or attempted to by the defense lawyers and so forth. So, even though the journalism questions is somewhat different, I just never had a big. I understand that witnesses, from a prosecution standpoint, they have to make deals to get testimony, and so I understand all that, and that's the way it's got to be done, as distasteful as it is at times. But I don't think when you have the option as a journalist, I am not in favor of paying, because I think it always calls the value of the statements or the testimony into question. So if I had my druthers, there would not be paid interviews.
Yeah, well, to me, it makes it lose credibility. I mean, if anybody can say anything at the for amount of money, you know. So, but this was not supposed to be for interviews, though. This was supposed to be for the pictures and stuff of Kaylee, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that was how.
Which is ridiculous, because you know that's not what they really wanted as much. They wanted the rights for all this stuff. But that's what it was supposed to be for. I mean, if they want to buy pictures, I can send them pictures of my kids when they were little. They're a little water damaged from Katrina, but I do have some they can have if they want to send pics, you know, pay for pictures.
And, you know, I'm not a technical guy in any way, shape, or form as far as computers go, but when you start paying for anything, and even if it's photos versus an interview or a statement, can't stuff even be photoshopped? I mean, I realize it can be detected, but when you're willing to pay, don't you encourage people to submit stuff that may not be quite real?
Yes, I think you actually bring up a very valid point.
That's now, very true.
Now, this $200,000, and I don't think it ends there, by the way, even though that was what Byers
that's all
claimed.
That's had to admit to.
I mean, why would anyone pay $200,000 for photographs that were actually of no value? I mean, it was obviously a ruse to get the interview.
Right. That's what I said. You know, they use the pictures as an excuse so that way they can't, nobody can say that they just paid for the interview.
Now, if we go back to Mr. Byers' accounting, all right, he also admitted that the defense team received $70,000 from a member of the defense team, although he's no longer involved, Todd Macaluso. Macaluso actually pulled out, I think, in February, early February, because he's being hounded by the California Bar Association for writing bad checks on one of his clients' accounts.
Right.
I mean, what a wonderful person to have supporting your cause. And the final admission was there was $5,000 from some donor who still remains anonymous. But, I mean, you know, $5,000 chump change to someone like Byers, probably just enough to keep him and Casey in Twinkies and Starbucks. That, when you total it up, comes to $275,000. Mm. Now, here's what he actually said in court, which was why the hearing went south fairly early, that he had received $89,000 and that $20,000 or $22,000 had gone to Miss Pro Bono Lyons. Well, that leaves a big gap in the accounting field, by my reckoning.
Yeah, a whole big gap in it. I don't know. I think that they need some more explaining to do with all this money. I still don't agree with the results of that hearing, though.
Denny.
Yes.
It is expensive to hire lawyers. I don't think anyone would question that. But effectively, the defense team has burned their way through $275,000. Do you think that they could possibly have spent that much?
I suppose anything's possible, but I don't know how much investigation they've done as far as hiring private detectives and that type of thing. If they've had, I don't know, maybe it's tough for me to come up with the $270,000 or so figure. It's possible, but I would certainly want to see it. I'd want to see something, an accounting of how the money was spent.
Well, I know it's expensive. I mean, people don't do anything for cheap anymore. You know, I mean, it costs for DNAs, you know, any kind of testings and stuff. All of this is expensive. I can understand all that, but this is a lot of money. And for him to only come up with, what was he said, almost 90,000 for him and 22.5 for Andrea Lyon. Why wouldn't he explain where everything else went? I mean, he was totally, he thought he was exempt from having to explain anything else. He even said that this was discussed in camera, and he didn't think he had to say it, but the judge said, yes, you do. So it really caught him off guard because he thought he was, I mean, they went to court totally unprepared on how to explain, thinking that they didn't have to.
Is this the end of it, or has somebody got more explaining to do, or was this one hearing, was that
no,
total?
He finally, he did say that he still wants to see where that money went. He did agree that Casey's broke, but he did say he still wants to see this. I don't know how long he's given him, but he's given him time. He wants to see where all this money has went to. And when they agreed that now the taxpayers is going to have to foot the bill, they have to explain every dime that they spend after that. I mean, they have to get approval for everything. They can't just pocket it and not say anything. But they've gotten away with all this other time. So why, I mean, who's to say that they won't again?
Well, didn't Casey come into this thing broke? Did she have any money to begin with? Or was
no,
it
that's
Cindy and
she
George's
wasn't
money
even
or?
Working. I mean, I don't know where she would have had money because she wasn't even working before. So I don't know. This was all sold after all this has started up.
Jan,
huh?
Are you going to tell me? And now today is Sunday. It's a day to be truthful. Are you going to tell me that she didn't have that big paying job at the movie studio? Believe it.
I don't think she did. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think she did. I thought you had me on something that I didn't know about here. No, I mean, it's still, though, this is still something that I think they're still going to have to explain, but I'm really worried that he's going to come up with something else and just really con the courts.
I hope Judge Strickland, doesn't fall for any crap. I mean, I hope
me too.
He sees through it.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Actually, what bothers me is I'm not sure that Baez was actually telling the whole truth.
I don't think he was either. I don't think he knows what truth means.
I mean, it just doesn't gel with information that Jan and I received quite a long time ago. I believe that prior to the ABC deal, there was another $30,000 paid by someone named Peter. Casey was overheard saying to Baez, thank goodness, Peter came through with the 30 grand. Now, I have my own personal suspicions.
Was it Casey that said it or Baez that said it?
No, it was Casey.
Oh, I thought it was Baez.
And I have my own personal theory on who that Peter might be. But regardless of whether, you know, my theory about the right Peter is right, I do know that there was money involved. So I don't think we got the whole story, not by a long shot.
Oh, I don't think everything was told either.
Actually, what really amused me was when things went south almost immediately after the hearing started, the defense went into a huddle. They came back, and they actually put Baez and Lyon effectively on the stand. I mean, I couldn't believe the idiocy in that move.
I didn't understand that either, because that was a mistake on their part.
And it was an immediate opportunity for a fishing expedition by the prosecution. And my goodness, they certainly took full opportunity.
Yeah, but this was this new lawyer's fault. I mean, he's the one that did that.
Oh, is he actually a lawyer?
Well, if he wants to call himself that.
I just viewed him as a guy with an enormous mouth. And that brings us on to Lion. When she was on the stand, she actually claims that she has spent $70,000 on this case. Now, Jan and I are not quite in agreement as to the exact words. I maintain that what she means is that she spent $50,000 of cash that she had fundraised for her, quote, clinic, and $20,000 that came from Baez. But Jan thinks differently.
It's $22,500 that she got from Baez. So she raised $50,000. There's $2,500 there somewhere. She said $70,000 from her raising it from this whatever charity or whatever that she raised it for. She said $70,000 and subtract, take out $22,500 of that is what she had left over from them. I mean, I like me and Simon can't. We haven't agreed on what if she means that the what would have been $47,500 come from the class or wherever she got the raise and the money from or what. But I mean, the way I took it was that her $22,000 came from this that they raised out of a $70,000. Because she said they raised $70,000.
Right. So, really, what we're arguing about is how much she spent. Is it $70,000 or is it $92,500?
Right. That's the way. But she said take out $22,500. But to me, that sounds like she didn't get the $22,500 from Baez out of the $200,000 or whatever they claim that it come from. Sounded to me like she got that out of the money from the that they raised in the whatever.
Okay. The thing that bothered me most, though, is an ethics question. And it's an ethics question that doesn't actually revolve around money. On the stand, she openly admitted that 14 of her students are working on the case at her request. They are unpaid, so it's more pro bono, but it is classwork, i.e. their GPAs are dependent on what they do. Danny, have you ever heard of such an outrageous misuse of ethics?
I even have trouble mentioning using the word ethics with this crew. It somehow doesn't seem to fit. But I haven't, Simon. The more you hear of the bunch, the whole bunch, it's not just Bozo or, excuse me, Mr. Baez. It just seems to be the whole crew. The more you hear, the worse it gets, in my opinion, from an ethical standpoint. So, no, I think it's ridiculous.
Yes, she specifically said if they want their grade, they're going to do it.
Let me ask you this, Simon and Jan. Now, they've been at this for several months, Bozo and company, with additions here and there. But I'm just trying to think. They got 14 more now, apparently, students working on the case. What exactly do they do? I'm trying to figure out that Bozo's been hard at this for months with different assistants. I mean, there are only so many things to investigate here.
Right.
You can review everybody's depositions or statements. You can do it, but eventually you run out of stuff to look at. So I'm just not sure what 20 or 30 people can be doing full time or almost full time on this case. I don't know. I didn't think it was quite that complex.
we wouldn't seem to be that complex.
But yeah.
I'm just really, really concerned that here we have a university professor who is tenured, obviously earns a pretty decent salary, is using her students for her case. I mean, from an ethics standpoint, it's outrageous.
Has the university commented on that? Has there been any kind of reaction from them to this point?
No, absolutely not. But I understand that that this news really only hit the fan on Thursday. You know, even though it, you know, it had been mentioned before, you know, now it's part of court record that, you know, yes, she's doing this.
She had to admit that on under oath.
Right. I mean, if I was the university, I would become unglued. Can't have a professor doing this. I mean, effectively, she's using her position to get people to act as her minions. You know, if they don't do it, they ain't passing her class.
She said they have to get the, do it to get the grade. I mean, I know they're not doing it for money. They're doing it for their grades.
Well, in many ways, that's even
exactly,
worse.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like bribing your teacher, you know. Do something. If I do this, will you pass me in your class?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it used to be just sex and drugs. Yeah, now it's lawyering. The other thing that came up, and the prosecution just hammered on it time and time again, the subject of book and movie deals.
Yeah, they were all asked under oath if there was any done, and all of them say no.
I think it's a load of BS. But I will say this, that they're going to have to tread very, very carefully.
Yeah, you know, if any book deals is done now, they're going to have to put it in somebody else's name. And you can believe, if they do, after this case is over, I will be right there investigating it down to the penny. And I want to see if there's any association whatsoever with any of these lawyers. And if there is, I will bring it out, one way or another.
Actually, the other thing that amazed me was how surprised Byers seemed to be when the judge asked him about numbers. You know, it was almost like something out of a Judge Judy episode. Well, I don't know how much I spent. I don't know what happened to that $150,000.
They went in not prepared because they didn't think they would have to explain any of it. They thought they was going to be exempt, like they get exempt from everything else in this case. And they were thrown on this. They weren't expecting that. Baez had that smirk on his face when he was called up to testify. It was like, okay, well, we can do this and get it over with. He never once thought he was going to be forced into answering those questions.
I had actually assumed that it was George and Cindy that had acquired the $200,000 from ABC.
No, I believe it was like $20,000 or something like that that they had gotten just before they had that, went on their cruise.
Right. No, I'm talking about the original $200,000.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm pretty certain that it was them that brokered the deal with ABC. And I'd assumed that was the money that they were using to live on. Neither of them work. So, you know, what the hell are they living on?
I have no idea. Well, they claim that she's drawn to disability, but trust me, disability does not pay that much.
Well, good Lord, George should be drawing disability because he's married to her.
Well, I agree with that one, too. But, I mean, with the facts here, that's I know disability doesn't pay you that much money. And there's something else going on that nobody knows about. There has to be. You don't live off of nothing. You have to have money coming in. And I don't believe this charity thing for missing children that they have has been pulling up enough money for them. I mean, when have they done anything?
Right. I mean, and what are they doing with the back boat?
Exactly. Where is it?
Hmm. Anyway, that was Thursday. Friday rolled around, and Strickland quickly did agree that Casey was indigent. And I have read the document. It is available online. It's short and to the point. Doesn't really cover a great deal, but as I understand it, the state will pay for experts and investigators, but not attorney fees. Now, I'm not quite sure where that puts Ms. Lyon and her her little group.
Yeah.
And there was some other news that came out this week. I think I'll hand it over to my my chief gossip. What about George's fling?
Okay, well, a lot of people don't believe that any of this is true at all. So, but there is rumored out that George has been having an affair, or was having an affair with a woman, and according to her sister, he supposedly gave some statements to her saying that Kaylee actually died of an accident. And I guess, I mean, if this is true, which a lot of people don't believe it, but I kind of wonder about it myself. And although him having an affair has nothing to do with this case, I could care less what he does away from, I mean, that's his private life. But, I mean, who can blame him if he did? You know, I mean, tried living with his wife for a little while. But anyway, that's all beside the point. But if he did say this to this woman, that Kaylee's death was an accident, that would prove that he did know something about it when all along they claimed they didn't. Now, I've always said I don't think that they actually were involved in her death, but I've always said that they were involved with covering it up. I mean, with the car, trying to clean the back of the car out, washing the jeans that was in the car, now saying that about the smell in the car, trying to pass it on as old pizza that was left in the car. I mean, the hairbrush thing, all of it is a cover-up, and that's obstruction of justice, and I don't understand how come they haven't been put in jail for that to begin with. But, yeah, this is a little something that gives you wonder to make, you know, to question it as to whether or not he really does know something. Maybe he was drinking and he told the woman and confessed it. Now he knows he's in trouble, so of course they're going to deny it. And you know Cindy's going to make him deny it for sure. So,
okay, let's move on to the Hayley Cummings story. There really hasn't been a great deal going on this week. I did talk with TJ Hart yesterday, I think it was, or Friday. He's doing fine. He's enjoying life away from the case. And
I would like to say something just a second, because in case he's listening, I would like to tell him that we do miss him, but we know his health is more important. Okay.
There were two trials set to get started tomorrow. but only one is going to be going ahead. Daniel Snodgrass. He's accused of capital rape. In fact, the actual charges are that he raped a 9-year-old girl. Tomorrow, jury selection begins, and insiders are telling us that the prosecution is going all out to throw the damn book at him. And I think he deserves every year he gets.
Oh, yes, I do too. And some.
The second trial that was supposed to start tomorrow was that of William Cobra Storbs. That is on hold. And again, insider information that we've received says there may well be a very, very happy ending to this ridiculous situation by Tuesday or Wednesday. I do have the inside track, but I've agreed not to disclose details until it actually happens. But they are pretty funny. I have the world's greatest deposition that I am just dying to put online. The PCSO, they've very much gone into hibernation mode. It's a bit like talking to a black hole at the moment. But this is very much their modus operandi. And it usually signals the onslaught of a new slew of activity. So, fingers crossed, something will be happening in the very near future. We did receive a fascinating email this morning from a member of the Sheffield family. They're not seeking fame or fortune, but it makes it pretty clear what their thoughts are. And I'm just going to quote a couple of sentences from it. Like I have said all along, look into someone's eyes and see if they can convince you of the truth. Misty, for one, knows how I feel. She will probably take the truth to her grave. Oh. I found that a really, really interesting comment.
Kind of a strong one, huh?
Yeah.
A chilling one.
Denny, what would you make of a comment like that?
I suppose there's different ways to look at it. I think it's a little weird. I'm not really sure. What did Jan say? Chilling?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's. I suppose you could just say somebody saying that, you know, she's never going to break. She'll take it with her to whoever. But I don't know. I don't like that type of a thing. It makes me a little uneasy.
In other words, they apparently are saying that she never will break. She never will talk.
Well, I took it slightly differently, and I took it as meaning, you know, Misty does know. Misty absolutely knows. Whether she'll tell or not is a different story.
Well, I think she knows more than what she's saying she knows, but I think she's scared to talk, or maybe she's covering her own tracks, or either that or somebody's gotten to her and scared her enough, or maybe it would involve her if she does tell. I mean, there's so many different reasons she won't talk, but, I mean, I'm surprised that she's held out this long with the pressure they've put under her.
Basically, the only other thing that happened this week was our good friends Nancy Grace and Art Harris were proclaiming from the rooftops the existence of a jail letter written by Misty, and they're alluding to its volatility. But it's pretty clear that what they have is just a bunch of hot air. If they had the goods, they'd be shouting bombshell and exclusive.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know too much about that one, but that's the truth.
Let's take a caller, someone coming in from a very mysterious area code. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello?
Hello. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
My name is Mudkip.
Okay.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with raping children.
Splendid. It's always good to hear from people with different attitudes. Not sure it's a particularly good attitude.
He doesn't think there's anything wrong with what?
Raping children.
Well, I think you're sick.
Yeah, splendid. Okay, well, that was Mudskip. Maybe Mudskip will Mudskip her off somewhere else. Okay. But there's a couple of other subjects that I really, really want to touch on today. Child abuse in general. I was reviewing a book that a friend of mine actually wrote, and although it wasn't about child abuse, he did have a really, really alarming statistic in it. And he claimed that one in four children have been touched inappropriately. I was shocked at this statistic. So I called him up and I said, Robert, you know, this is a horrible number, but did you just invent this out of thin air, or did you get it from somewhere? And he said, oh, no, I got it from somewhere. And he supplied, half a dozen websites, child advocacy websites, and they're all saying the same thing. You know, one in four, that's 25% of children have been touched inappropriately. Denny, are you shocked when you hear a number like that?
I certainly was when I first heard about it. I was shocked, amazed, and then when I realized it wasn't just one opinion. Like you said, the stats are available in multiple places. I was actually terrified. I never had any inkling it was that bad.
Mm. Okay, well, let's quickly take another caller. We have someone coming in from the 404 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought about all these niggers.
Oh, splendid. Okay.
Well, I got that number.
Yep.
I can trace that one.
Yep, and we will be. Here's another good question. I mean, we've just had two callers that are obviously completely ignorant. Why do people do that?
I don't know.
Denny, you got any ideas?
I suppose attention to get a reaction from people. certainly the first caller, I'm sure, got a reaction about, you know, seeing nothing wrong with raping children. So if that was the goal, then he succeeded.
Well, I'm not sure he really got the reaction he wanted, which would probably a huge argument.
Not from you, Simon. I'm looking at the chat room, and he ruffled some feathers there, rightfully so. Most people don't have a very high opinion of this guy.
Hmm. Yeah, the 404 number is an Atlanta area code, so.
Oh.
I used to live in Atlanta, I know.
Who do we know that lives in Atlanta?
All right, I didn't say that. But it was an area code from Atlanta.
Okay, we do have another caller, but I'm getting a little gun-shy, seeing as they're hiding behind a blocked caller ID. So maybe we'll just go back to the discussion rather than...
If you can't call in and identify it, don't answer it.
Right. So we were talking about this 1 in 4 children being inappropriately touched. I mean, it's a horrible statistic. And when you actually look at it even deeper, you discover that a lot of it is by family members. This horrifies me even more. You know, and when you add to that the issue with drugs, which seems to be the scourge of modern society. You know, in fact, I read an article a couple of weeks ago about Florida raiding 5 pain clinics. And these people were responsible for releasing 2 million oxys and roxys onto the street. 2 million stinking pills.
Wow.
And oxys and roxys, I think, have a street price of, you know, $10, $15, $20 a pill. So, you know, we're talking a $20 million plus dollar operation.
Wow.
How do we stop it? Okay, let's try a caller from the 313 area code. Area code 313, you're on the air. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Yes, fat nigger, fat nigger, fat nigger, fat nigger, fat.
Splendid.
Oh, right.
Okay. I'm not quite sure where...
That one was from Detroit.
Yeah. Maybe, well, maybe Detroit has some of those. I wouldn't know.
What do you think, Simon, generated the last two calls? I mean, we were talking or have been talking about child abuse and crimes against children, so that first one about the rape, I could at least it was on topic, I suppose, even though... It was kind of, an offbeat opinion, but I don't know where the other ones are coming from as far as the subject matter.
And it's really hard to figure out. I could hazard some guesses. You know, it's people that disagree with our general. View on news stories, and they, you know, you're right. They want their 2 seconds in the limelight. But going back to the drugs. Drugs are a huge problem in today's society, and drugs and child abuse, child endangerment. Seem to run hand in hand. What can we do, Denny?
Well, some of the cases I've seen and heard about, and we've talked about this with the Haley case too, is I don't know whether these agencies, these state agencies, the Child Protective Services, I guess they have different names in different states, but their function basically is to protect the children, and whether they're just overburdened or what, there seems to be a certain number, a certain degree of problems in that area when you hear about the kids, some of the situations they find themselves in, the family or the makeup of the family or the people, the home that they're living in. And when you hear that Child Protective has been called multiple times and done investigations, and then when the child ends up missing or dead, you know, people just scratch their head saying, well, why was this child still there? Why wasn't something done? And I know, you know, when it's a parent, the parents have a lot of rights, and they don't remove children from parents lightly, and that's the way it should be. But some of these cases, you think, my God, how could this possibly happen? How could someone be subjected to this type of environment or abuse for this long, with the authorities apparently having known about it, and yet the child remains with the in that scenario? So I think that might be one problem, because the very agency that's supposed to see that this stuff doesn't happen, sometimes for whatever the reason, doesn't seem to get the job done. And that's that should be a child, one of the first lines of defense. The other line of defense, I think, are other family members. If you know, for example, that your live-in boyfriend or husband, I guess there are certain cases it works the other way where it's a female, but generally speaking, that or maybe it's your brother or your son, and you know they're into child porn, for example. Maybe you see it on their computer. Maybe you see it in their room. And if you don't physically live with them, maybe when you're talking with them, you get the idea that they're into this kind of thing. You really have to do something about it. So people who are in a position to know that there's a potential problem here need to take action. And it's got to be tough, I'm sure, when it's a relative or close friend. But the alternative is to keep your trap shut and leave the potential victims at the mercy of this individual. So I think there's got to be the willingness on the part of people in a position to know what's going on, to see what's going on, to do something about it. And then when they do involve an agency, a governmental agency, that agency can't drop the ball. They've got to go ahead and do what needs to be done.
We do have a slew of callers waiting, and just based on the ignorant callers that we had before, I ask you please to go into the chat room and just identify yourself by area code, and that way we will know if you're naughty or nice. Denny.
Yes.
We were talking a little earlier today about how you became interested and involved in the plight of missing and abused children. And you mentioned a case that I can honestly say I had never heard of, Hannah Mack.
Mm-hmm.
Can
that
you
was my hook to
right.
to really start paying attention to this situation with children. It's
I read about that story and it broke my heart.
It's just sickening, just absolutely sickening. And you know, and I got to tell you now. Granted, I know that we talk a lot about Haley, and certainly we don't know what happened to Haley. We all hope she's okay. We all hope she's alive and will be returned safely. However, the Hannah Mack case, it seemed to have some of the same elements family-wise as we're talking here. There was drugs, pot smoking, this and that involved. Child Protective had been involved and had some idea of what was going on. And you wonder, you know, again, now this kid didn't have a chance. I mean, it's just a very, very sickening, sad situation.
She didn't have a chance, and it's really very sad.
Tell us a little bit more about the actual case itself. I mean, people need to hear this story.
Yeah, it was September 10th of 2007. This case out of Texas, and a young girl's name, 6-year-old Hannah Mack, was found hanging from a beam by a rope in a garage, and the subsequent investigation revealed that she had been sexually assaulted, and the stepfather, the live-in boyfriend, let me put it that way, that was living in the house with Hannah and her mom, was a child porn guy, and in fact, he was eventually convicted of possession of child porn and sentenced to 98 years. And the guy who was convicted actually pled guilty to avoid the death penalty of raping and murdering her, and was a neighbor, and he one evening, September of 7, was talking with the live-in boyfriend on the porch. They were smoking a little dope, and eventually, the live-in boyfriend calls the young girl out, Hannah, and starts wanting her to sit on his lap and that type of thing. And she's obviously not comfortable with that. Apparently, there have been some things going on. She didn't want to do it. And a few more joints, and they take her into the garage and undress her and so forth and rape her. Now, this came from the guy who the neighbor, a 19-year-old kid at the time, who told the story, and he implicated the live-in boyfriend in the murder itself. The live-in boyfriend could not be charged. There was insufficient evidence. Apparently, the only thing they had, they didn't have any DNA. The DNA they found at the scene was from the 19-year-old neighbor. So, but they did put the live-in boyfriend away for 98 years for the child porn issue. And the story, and listening to this guy tell this story about sitting on the steps with the girl and how they, tried a couple of things and she didn't want to go with it, and a couple of more joints and then into the garage. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I read that, maybe Jan is familiar with it. Maybe she would join me in this. That's the type of guy I'd like to get my hands around his neck.
Yes.
I'm just I'm just infuriated. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I was looking it up when Simon told me about it. I looked it up real quickly before the show, and I seen a picture of the guy that was convicted of actually doing it. I didn't know. I didn't get to that far to say that he was trying to implicate the mother's boyfriend too. But I did read where the mother's boyfriend had been accused of raping a child, a 15-year-old girl, and I believe it was back in 95 or something like that. And he got out of it. In other words, that it wasn't sufficient evidence or something. But later on, he ended up marrying this little girl. And then now they found child porn on his computer and all that. But it doesn't surprise me if he was in on it, though. I mean, I like I said, I didn't get that far with the reading, but that's really disgusting.
Okay, we're going to risk the phone lines one more time. Well, area code 520, what's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
My name is Danny Mao, and I have a program on talk show also, but I'm not calling to promote that. I just happened to be scrolling, and heard that one derogatory statement that came over the air. And the person that made that may or may not realize, but that his phone number can be traced, and then he can be charged with a crime. So I hope he hears that, because on my program, I had the same problem one night from a young girl, 17, and an older man, apparently from the same house with two numbers. And I threatened to call the FBI and report them and bring charges against them, then they shut up. But anyway, I just wanted to pass that on for your benefit. Those phone numbers, when they call in, are traceable to the source, and it is against the law to do that.
You're very right. I've got the numbers wrote down, too.
Let them call again
and
put them in jail, you know.
Have their names.
The second thing is that this child abuse, in my personal opinion, is going entirely too far. Bill Clinton, and I certainly don't support him, but he did pass the law, three strikes and you're out. And I personally believe that a time has come in America in particular where when you're dealing with terrorists and men and women alike that abuse children and end up raping and killing them, it's no longer three strikes you're out, it's one strike you're out.
Exactly.
Why should we feed 300 terrorists that are convicted in our prison system for the rest of their lives and house them, let them watch television, lift weights and so forth? Why should we have pedophiles in prison for life or many years, and we're feeding and supporting them, and they robbed from a family the most precious treasure they have, which is their children? It's ridiculous. And it's a proven fact that the pedophiles and the terrorists are not rehabilitatable. They get out of jail on Guantanamo Bay, they went back to the battlefield. These pedophiles get out of jail, they go right back and do the same thing again. Recently in the news, this young girl was jogging, 17 years old. This guy that should have never been released from prison, he's back on the streets, stalks her, rapes her, and kills her. And I think the American people should pass a law that it would be capital punishment for those particular type of crimes, period.
Oh, I think...
I don't think there should be any question in it.
Right. In fact, there's a court case starting up tomorrow. It hasn't garnered a great deal of interest, and unless you happen to be following the search for Haley Cummings. But there's a gentleman by the name of Daniel Snodgrass. He's accused of capital rape of a 9-year-old child. This happened, 2-3 years ago. And guess what? He wasn't even in jail. They had a monitoring device on him. So he's been happily living, you know, with his boyfriend, incidentally. I mean, this is stupidity. Who would bond out a guy accused of raping a 9-year-old?
Okay, I bet the bondsman wouldn't feel that way if it was one of their children being molested or raped. A judge that lets them out wouldn't feel that way if their child was molested or raped, or a politician. If it was the President of the United States' child, do you think they would get away with it? No. So what makes another person off the street that is a nobody to them any different?
Well, you know, it's not only limited to the United States, this problem of pedophilia, but you take any Muslim country.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yes, sir. I say, it's not only limited to the United States, this problem with pedophilia, but you take in Muslim countries, if you're not a Muslim and you're a Christian, they will rape your children and kill them or decapitate them to try to force the families to become Muslim. This is a worldwide problem. It's not just restricted to the United States.
Well, we think of the United States because we're here, but you're right. It is worldwide, and it's just not right.
And I just can't imagine the terror in two little children in Indonesia walking to school, and some Muslims, three or four of them, if I remember correctly, rape them and, I believe, decapitate them. They're just young kids, you know? And it seems like that people just don't want to face these things that happen worldwide. They don't even want to face it in the United States. And it really is, unless, as the lady who spoke before me said, if it was their child, they may have a different viewpoint, but generally it's an attitude, well, that's happening in North Carolina, and I'm in New York, or it's happening in New York, I'm not in North Carolina, it can't happen here. The problem is it's happening in all 50 states.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, thank you for calling in. And do hope that you will keep listening to us. Denny,
yes.
What can we do to protect our children today?
A few things. If I may, I'd like to comment a little bit about the caller and what he had to say. And at the risk of being attacked for my comments, I'm going to say it anyway. I think that he was 100% right. You can't monkey around with the safety of our children by taking chances on these people that they're rehabilitatable, if that's a word, and say, okay, we're gonna put them back out in the street and see what happens. It you just can't do it. The consequences, if they're wrong, if the people that are doing the evaluations and so forth are wrong, the consequences, in my opinion, are just too severe. I don't think they have a right to play that game with the lives of the children in this country. Now, that's my personal opinion. So one strike and you're out, and so on and so forth. The other thing, the caller mentioned the death penalty. I know that there's a lot of discussion about death penalty. Not everybody's in favor of it, but I personally am. I support it under certain conditions, under certain circumstances. And when you're talking about these child killers, child rapists, and so forth, what I think is they should, any place that, any state where the death penalty is still in effect, that with today's technology, with DNA and so forth, we're using DNA evidence now to release people who were wrongly convicted, and that's a great thing. I think the use of DNA should work both ways, though. It shouldn't just open the cell door. It should also close the door to the death chamber behind these individuals. And not in 5 years or 8 years or 12 years or 22 years where they outlive the families and so forth of their victims. If there's a positive 100% or whatever the maximum it can be with DNA evidence, if that's there, and as long as there's not a mental issue or that type of thing, I think these people should be meet their maker and give an account of their life to him within, say, 48 months. I don't know. Once you got that positive identification, I think they need to convict them. If they're sentenced to death, carry out the sentence when you know beyond any reasonable doubt or any doubt at all you've got the right person. And the opponents of the death penalty always cite the cost. Well, the cost is you let these people live for 15 or 20 years with their appeals, and we're footing the bill for the appeals. It costs the same amount of money,
right,
to buy a hamburger for a guy who's doing life or a guy that's waiting to go to the chamber. Where the money comes in is these endless appeals. And first of all, when you're doing it that way, it doesn't have the deterrent effect, I believe, because, you know, you very seldom hear about the execution. So I don't think it has that, like a fairly prompt execution would have. And it obviously costs a lot more money to keep these people. And when there's, like I say, they're using DNA evidence now to let people out, and that's a good thing. I don't want to see anybody wrongly convicted spending their life in jail or going to the execution chamber. but I think it needs to work both ways. And when the person is definitely, beyond any doubt, the guilty party, and they've committed these types of crimes, I think they should be dealt with in a fairly prompt manner. And the other thing is, as long as they're drawing breath, they're a danger. So I say, if you got them and there's no doubt about it, go ahead and carry out.
Take care of them. Right.
Okay. Let's take a quick call. Someone coming in from the 386 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, everybody. This is Thug Cops for Christ from the chat room. And I have a thought. I hear a lot of interesting and I think valid discussion of whether Haley Cummings has been abducted as collateral on a drug debt. And I do think that's plausible. Something else that kind of gnaws at me, though, I do hear talk about, say, the interview that Cobra did with the older lady who was kind of a junkie herself and talked about Misty and others being involved in this really ugly, seedy sort of prostitution for drugs thing. And I don't know if that was going on. I wonder if that was going on at the time that she was involved with the Cummings family. And I wonder if there's any possibility that Haley could have been taken too close to that crowd. Because I think that, you know, a deviant in one area with adult women could very well have some deviancy, you know, toward children. And I wonder if you guys think that's any possibility. And if you don't mind, I'll hang up and listen to my answer off the air.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. That actually is a great question. And that there's been so many rumors swirling around. Ronald Cummings supposedly owed $30,000 to, a drug person. Did they abduct Haley? I don't know. I honestly just do not know. The one thing I do know is that that's generally not the modus operandi that the street gangs use. They tend not to abduct. They tend just to kill. Denny, you any thoughts on it?
Yes, I've heard that. Obviously, that logic too. That scenario that perhaps she was Haley was abducted regarding the drug debt, and it seems to me that at this point, I mean, it would be one thing if I was trying to get somebody's attention, I might take the child for a day, 2 days, or whatever, to prove I could do it, maybe, to send the message that, hey, your kid isn't safe. You better jack up my money or else. But it seems to take the child, like, on a permanent basis, and we're, that's what it's looking like now. It almost seems that then becomes a liability. I mean, now you've got a kidnapping rap hanging over your head. You've got to care for the child, feed her, clothe her, get her medical attention if necessary, all these types of things. And so after a certain point, I'm just not sure I see the benefit of abducting the child and keeping her and having to take care of her and all this kind of thing and facing additional charges. I agree with you, Simon. It would more be along the kill line as a revenge thing. I really have trouble seeing that as a long-term situation, an abduction with a long-term holding of the person. I just run out of logic. The logic of it fails me after a while. I could see it to send the message initially, but not keeping the child for such a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing in the world you need is a kidnapping rap. I mean, that's that's pretty serious offense. You know, that represents years and years and years in jail.
I mean, it's not like they're going to keep the child as collateral, you know, not all this time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree with Denny.
Right.
You know, sure, you want to send a message, you know, you borrow the child for a day, you know, knowing full well that the parents are too scared to call the cops. Yeah, and then you bring the child back and enter into some serious negotiation. The only reason I could see that you would want to keep the child for a prolonged period of time would be if you were a family member and feared for the child's welfare in their current situation.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Like, maybe laugh with Ronald and Misty wasn't that great.
Or life with her mother. Either side. Maybe people got together and did this.
Ooh! That's a great conspiracy theory.
Well, it's a thought. I mean, we got to go down all lines, you know. So you can't rule out anything right at this point because we don't know.
What I do find interesting is that pretty much the PCSO and all of the other organizations are saying the same thing, that it was not a stranger abduction. So,
and they're still sticking with that.
Right. You know, so it does lend credibility, if you will, to, you know, the idea that she was abducted by a family member, or, and I hate to say this, she is no longer walking on the planet.
I'm sorry, I can't go that line yet. I still feel like she's out there. I don't know where. I don't know with who. I just feel it in my heart that she's still out there.
Denny, I'm going to come back to you. I liked your reasoning about how to meet punishment out. I think it's ridiculous that, you know, someone can sit on death row for 20, 25 years. You know, there's got to be a way to fix it. And I honestly cannot believe that keeping someone alive for 20 years on death row is more cost-effective than killing them after 2 or 3 years.
I don't understand the purpose of it. Why keep them that long? Just go ahead and do it and get it over with.
That's the thing, but these people never seem to run out of appeals.
I know.
In certain cases, even if they want to die, and I can't remember any of the names right offhand, but I've heard of these cases where the person on death row says, okay, I'm ready, you know, to strap me in and drop, or, you know, turn on the juice or whatever it is. And then one of these, like ACLU or something,
yeah,
will on their own file yet another appeal and say, wait a minute, we're not satisfied with that. We want this looked at again. So these things can just go on and on and like I say, when you have the DNA that proof positive, that should eliminate a lot of the appeal issues. You know, and the ones that remain, you should be able to hear them. You know, they have one court, I guess it's in Virginia or somewhere, Maryland, they call it a rocket docket, where they're noted to get stuff through quickly. I think when you've got this positive DNA, so you know you had the right person, if that's not an issue, And the only appeal thing is, well, whether the lawyer maybe might have doped off during the trial or something like that. Those issues, why not have a rocket docket? Say, okay, if that's the only issue here, was the counsel adequate? We'll take a look at it. We'll do that within 48 months. If our decision is yes, that there was nothing there on appeal, we know we've got the right guy. We know he's the one or she's the one. There's no doubt about it. Then go ahead and get him in there and do the deed.
Okay, but why would it take 48 months to do that?
I would say do it within a week if I had my way.
Exactly. That's my point. Why?
I'm just saying set some limit. Right now there's no limit. These people can
just... Yeah, I understand that.
And on and on. So at least 48 months would be something better than 20 years or 25. But I'm with you, Jan. I don't see why they couldn't do it in 12 months or 6 months.
Right. I mean, there can't be that much work into investigating something like that. I mean... They've done the trial. They found them guilty. Okay, they took so long for that. So why give them an additional amount of time to investigate, see if they had a good, the right representative or if their lawyer did the case right? Why would it take that long? And as far as I'm concerned, I think they should only get one appeal, if any, at all, and then say, okay, well, that's too bad. You're guilty. They put people on death row that admit their guilt, and they still put them on death row for 20 years before they finally kill them. I mean, not that I'm not one that wants death for everybody, but if these people are guilty of what they did, they need to pay for their crime. I mean, if it was me or somebody else that doesn't have a dime to their name, they would be the first ones up. There's something terribly wrong with our system.
Yeah, well, there is, and it needs to be corrected. And,
yes, it does.
The error in the system isn't just death row. I mean, look at the Casey Anthony case. I mean, it is not going to trial until May of 2011.
Now, why they need that much time, I have no idea. I mean, why in the world do they need that much time? Why? Because every time they add a new lawyer, they have to fill them in on everything, every little paper that was written about the case. Is it going to take them 2 years to read everything that's been written? I think not. Of course, they're doing it pro bono, so they can't devote their time 24 hours a day. They do have other work to do. So we have to pay. The taxpayers have to pay for that cost.
Well, unless you're pro bono like Jose Baez.
No, we are still paying it. Regardless, we're having to pay for Casey to be fed 3 meals a day and for her to have her little pleasures that she gets. We are the ones that have to pay for that. So this is not something that's not costing us as taxpayers anything. So why let her sit? Why not put her in the public with other prisoners instead of keeping her protected? Why protect her? She's not royalty. Why protect her? Put her in with the rest of it, with the rest of the people like everybody else gets. I really get fired up whenever I think about the special treatment that this woman has received since all this happened. It really fires me up. Now I've got to take blood pressure medicine.
Mr. Simon, she might call in.
But, I'll go back to my serious question. Why does it take so long from the time that someone is charged with a crime until it actually arrives in court? I mean, there's only so much that you can do.
Yeah.
Denny.
Yes, you're exactly right. It's ridiculous. They will say that the courts are just overwhelmed, they're overburdened, there's too many crimes, too many charges, and they just can't keep keep up with the workload and then process the cases in a timely manner. And of course, there's always postponements and adjournments and you know, motions and sever the trials if you got co-defendants, and then somebody else has got a hangnail and somebody stubbed their toe and they can't make it to court that day. And I mean, it's just like an endless thing. And I just wanted to tell you real quickly about the death penalty, and we're talking about prompt executions. Now this wasn't the fault necessarily of the state, but there was a guy, and his name was Lemuel Smith in New York State, and he was convicted of three murders and sentenced to death. And that's, the year escapes me at the top of my head, but that's when the Supreme Court banned the death penalty for a while it was reevaluated. So his sentence was switched to life without parole. Well, that's all fine and good, and a lot of the anti-death penalty people were really glad, not just his case, but all these cases where the sentences were commuted to life in prison. Unfortunately, there was her name was Pyant, I believe, the last name, and she was a female prison guard. And she had the misfortune to be escorting this Mr. Smith to some kind of a class or somewhere in the prison. And he ended up overpowering her and, you know, raped and murdered. They identified him positively as the perpetrator because he bit her breast off, and they were able to match his tooth impressions up with the bite marks and prove it was him. So now he had four murders, but they still couldn't put the guy to death. So had it not been for that court decision, the Supreme Court, hopefully this guy would have been done. But just when you put him behind bars and let him live, that doesn't mean there's not still a danger. And heaven forbid if some of these guys ever got in. Now, you can say, well, okay, if they kill another inmate, so what? Well, that's a good argument, I guess. But what when they get a guard, or if they ever got loose in the administrative wing with civilian secretaries and so forth? I mean, so when you got people that are as dangerous as some of these people are, I'm all in favor of getting it done and getting it done quick.
Oh, and I think you make a very strong argument with that. And that's a horrible, horrible, horrible story.
Yeah, and I'm sure the husband of Mrs. Pyant would not agree with some of the people that, well, you know, we don't want to feel guilty. We don't want to be, you know, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. So we'll just lock him up for life, and then we don't have to worry about him. Well, that unfortunately is not the end of it. When
right.
People like Smith and some of these other ones, as long as they're drawing breath, the people that they're around, be it another inmate, a corrections officer, if they escape or whatever, other people are still subject to have to deal with them.
Actually, I saw an interesting little piece on the news. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Bernie Madoff, the great financier, apparently he had a bit of a set to in jail. Someone broke his nose and cracked a few ribs, and Bernie's a crook, but and hell, you know, violence is very prevalent in jail. Okay, we're about 90 seconds from going off air, so I want to go around the panel. Jan, I want to get your final thoughts on life, the universe, and everything.
I don't think you want all my thoughts, but anyway, I'll give the best that I can come up with. First of all, let me let everyone know we have not given up on Haley. Our prayers are still with her daily. We are hoping and praying to God every day that this child will be found. And not only her, but all the other children. We keep remembering them, and we think about them, and we pray that they will all be safe one day.
Denny.
Yes, on the general subject of child abuse and crimes against children,
I really think, as we've talked about on this show, that we need to examine our system and tighten it up where it needs to be tightened up and not give these people two or three bites at the apple. When they're nailed, when you got positive ID, when there's no question about guilt, keep them off the streets at least if they haven't killed, if they're molesters. Don't put them back out there. Don't risk the safety of the children to experiment on whether this person was rehabbed or not. I think the risk is too great to take. And if they do kill, get them in there if you got that proof positive and you're in a death penalty jurisdiction. Limit the appeals and carry out the sentence within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to thank everyone this afternoon for being part of the program and listening in. This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a wonderful Sunday, and I'm sure we'll be back again next week. Jen, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Danny, for being with us.
Danny, thank you.
For a great week.
Okay, you too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.